policy division order. We don't have a quorum, and we're going to review the transportation or MnDOT budget presentation today, and we have a lot of people here, so we will start without a quorum, and when we have a quorum, we'll take care of the business in the process. And welcome to the committee, Commissioner Sorrell, I see. Commissioner Sorrell, welcome to the
Thank you, thank you. Okay, thank you, Chairman. I'm just going to offer a few opening remarks and turn it over to Kevin Gray, our CFO. You know, when the governor offered me this position, seems like it was a while ago, but it's been about 10 months, I kind of viewed it as a calling and an opportunity to serve the citizens of Minnesota in a different capacity. And during my confirmation hearing, I outlined several key objectives and strategic objectives of the department. Those objectives were to provide a safe, multimodal transportation system, to improve mobility, to enhance the movement of people and freight, to promote innovation inside and outside the organization, to become the state transportation leader and employer of choice for Minnesota's diverse population, and lastly, to be transparent, to build public trust and confidence in MnDOT. So these are five key strategic directions that I hope that you see in MnDOT and all that we do, and I hope that you see them echoed in today's presentation, in our transportation plan that we're out there talking about now, getting feedback on, and just in our day-to-day behavior and our day-to-day activities. I'm hoping that you'll see that we're focused on those five key strategic directions. Our budget for 2010 and 11 include funding for four program areas of multimodal, state roads, local roads, and general support. And with the passage of Chapter 152 in 2008, which included revenue changes as well as supplemental operating appropriations and trunk highway bonding, relatively few initiatives are proposed in this budget. I also want to highlight, and I think we're all aware of this, but as we're getting very well prepared for the economic stimulus, and we're doing a lot of work at MnDOT to prepare ourselves for that. We have assigned a program manager in the department, John Chiglow, who was our project manager on I-35W. We brought him in and gave him the full responsibility of trying to implement economic stimulus. And we really expect that package to really deliver for the citizens of Minnesota. And the other part piece of that we're working really hard to do is to be so prepared that if additional money comes our way in Minnesota, we're prepared to take advantage of that. And I think we are in a position to do that. And I'm pretty proud of where we're at this point in time. As an agency, we remain committed to performance measures and linking resources to support our strategic vision and making your destination our priority. And if you've seen the materials that we've been producing lately, that's kind of become our slogan, the slogan that we're using to carry out our strategic vision and our strategic directions. Your destination is our priority. I think that's a pretty powerful statement, and I think it serves us very well. The budget that we're going to present is a financial framework for the future and represents progress towards addressing the critical issues of an aging infrastructure, environmental stewardship, diversity, innovation and collaboration, and fiscal responsibility. I'd like to conclude with that and turn it over to the CFO, Kevin Gray, to get into the details of the budget. But again, I'm hoping that you'll all start to see that what we're presenting to you here today is really focused around the strategic directions that we're starting to create in the department and for the transportation community as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Sorrell. We're happy to have you here, and we're glad we can hear about all the proposed new money or potential money. So we're happy to work with you, too. And if we could just pause a minute, we do have a quorum. I'd like to call the meeting to order. And you've looked at the meetings with some, or the minutes, would someone move the minutes? We have 2 minutes of January 20th and January 29th. Someone make a motion to approve the minutes.
January 20th, I'll move the minutes, Chair.
Representative Beard, move the minutes. Any questions or comments? You're moving both, Representative Beard.
Well, I was going to move 20 and share the glory with someone else, but I can move them both.
I thought you'd take care of both.
All right, I'll move them both.
The minutes, any questions or comments? If not, All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The minutes are approved. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to piggyback on the comments from Commissioner Sherrill and cover a couple of things as part of the budget overview, just to give you a framework for how we're going to walk you through our budget. We are going to keep it very focused on the straight and narrow, if you will, of the budget and give you kind of a sense of what the programs are that are supported by the budget, some of the key funding sources and dollar levels, and then talk very briefly about those few initiatives that we are indeed proposing as part of the change request, to use the older terminology, in conjunction with the fiscal 10 and 11 budget. Again, as the Commissioner noted, there are a relatively few number of initiatives because of the recent passage of the funding bill this past spring. That said, however, since that time, MnDOT has not been immune from budget pressures, pressures on our revenue sources, pressures to manage our resources as aggressively as possible in light of the economic scenario and the landscape. There is some complexity with the budget that we'll touch on in a couple of the areas as we get to them. We're going to specifically talk about aligning federal revenue, which is somewhat unique to the Trunk Highway Fund piece of MnDOT's budget. And by the way, the Trunk Highway Fund is far and away the biggest single source of our $4.9 billion biennial budget that is being proposed by the governor. Finally, when I first came to the committee a couple weeks ago, I guess it was, we talked about the impacts of the November forecast and touched upon the fact that there was a fund balance concern or challenge for FY09. Well, that's not technically part of the 10-11 budget. I just wanted to state that we will be proposing an adjustment as part of our FY09 budget to reestablish or reduce our expenditures in the state road construction program that were related to revenues that were anticipated from the federal advanced construction financing route that weren't necessary to deliver the program. So as I introduced when we talked about our forecast that we had lower revenue from the federal side, this is just the credit to the debit, if you will, if you'll indulge a financial guy, to take away the unnecessary appropriation authority from 09, which therefore means that we do not have a fund balance problem in FY09. And I'm not going to go into that anymore at this point in time unless the committee would like to do so.
Mr. Gray, too, do you prefer not having questions, or do you want to make your whole presentation before we get questions, or how would you like to handle it?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be appropriate to have questions throughout the presentation, in part because as we go through the balance of the presentation, I have a number of individuals here, including Mr. Tim Hinkle, who will be helping me cover the modal programs and some of the state road construction activities, and the office director speaks to the modal areas in our state road construction program delivery and operations and maintenance areas. So we'll have different parties up here, so I think it would be appropriate if the committee had any questions to ask at the time that the presenters are at the table, that would probably facilitate responding to the questions.
Okay. One thing I forgot to announce, if there are any cell phones, turn them off. I think we've gone through that every time. It does conflict with a recording device, so appreciate if you can turn them off all the way and not just on whatever it is. Mr. Gray, thank you.
Depending on what I say, I use the cell phone very selectively for this recording device. At this point in time, members, I'd like to walk you through the basic components of the MnDOT budget. A couple of bienniums ago, we did move from a more typical budget scenario to one that's program-based. And we have four key program areas that we've identified for our budget. The first being our multimodal area, which includes the most visible programs of aeronautics, transit, and freight. In addition, our state roads program, which is our biggest program, includes two key components, infrastructure investment and planning, or more commonly referred to as our construction program, as well as all the program delivery elements to ensure that the projects are identified and delivered, as well as our operations and maintenance. Lastly, we have two other programs, local roads, which is a very significant piece. We serve to be the pass-through agent for all the county and state aid funding that is generated by our state revenues. And lastly, our most modest piece of the puzzle is our general support and services, which recognizes our general, our department support functions, including everything from management and leadership to human resources, finance, and technology, as well as we have a pretty significant investment, as you'll see, in building infrastructure throughout the state. First of all, we're going to go into the modal programs. I'm going to ask Tim Hinkle, who is a director of program and modal management, to talk us through each of the individual programs. In fact, I'll let him go back to this slide quickly. And as I mentioned, we'll be bringing up the specific office directors responsible for these areas for questions and any other comments, too. And Mr. Chair, one last thing. We are trying to be respectful of the committee's time and recognize that we have an hour and a half to get through a lot of information, but we tried to tailor it to that end. If there are things that can't be answered during the session or questions that need further follow-up, we will certainly be accommodating to that. And if there's any subsequent sessions are required, welcome to that. But we're trying to get this into the budget essentials so you have the information to work with and get that done in today's time slot, as you indicated.
Thank you. That'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, members, good afternoon. My name is Tim Hinkle. I'm the Director of Modal Planning and Program Management for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. My charge today is to cover the multimodal areas. What I'll do for you is to cover the slide that is a brief summary that gives you the activities for each of the modes that we will cover today. I'll talk very briefly about the funding sources that go to the expenditures in each of those modal areas, and then cover any change items specific to each of the modal areas. First area is aeronautics. And as you can see by this summary, you can refer to page 20 in the detailed MnDOT budget manual if you want to look at any of the details regarding activities and services provided, as well as the funding sources. I will try to cover that, however, via this slide and give you some very quick information. First of all, the activities that are covered in the modal area of aeronautics. First area is air transportation operations. This is the services that the Office of Aeronautics provides with respect to the planes that we own and the trip and travel services that the Office of Aeronautics provides with that infrastructure for the legislature, for the governor, as well as agency staff across the state of Minnesota. The next activity area is the airport system investment and planning area. This area is specific to technical, financial, and administrative assistance. This is for the purpose of providing those services to the publicly owned airports across the state of Minnesota for planning, for infrastructure, for maintenance, as well as equipment needs. The third activity area is the aviation system management. This is the area and activity that provides weather information systems, the actual systems that are necessary for that information across the state, the repair and maintenance of navigational aid systems across the state, airport inspection activities, the licensing of airports, as well as the licensing or the aircraft registration activities. And finally, the traveler information activity, which is both an educational service as well as an information service, providing information to pilots, as well as working across the state to provide information with respect to how aviation is a boost to this state. The funding sources come in the form of direct appropriations as well as statutory appropriations. Looking first at the direct appropriations, you can see that $19.6 million is the base appropriation for airports. For those of you that aren't familiar with the sources of funding that make up that base, it comes from the aviation fuel tax, the aircraft registration tax, the airline flight tax, as well as any investment income that can benefit from those investments. And finally, under direct appropriations, you can see the $0.9 million base out of the Trunk Highway Fund that is primarily used to fund the pilots responsible for the air transportation operations. On the statutory side, you can see that we have approximately, and on average, $100 million per year in estimated federal grants that are appropriated through the Office of Aeronautics to those local airports, publicly owned airports, in the airport system investment and planning activity. Going to the next slide, there is one change item proposed by the governor for the aeronautics area. That is an additional $2.25 million one-time appropriation in fiscal year 2010 only for airport development grants. The fiscal year 2009 appropriation was decreased by the 2008 legislature, and project programs for 2009 were left unfunded given that decrease that occurred in 2008. This additional one-time appropriation would use available airports funds to provide more preservation and safety projects and maintenance activities across the state for those publicly owned airports.
Excuse me, Mr. Hankel. Representative Beard had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just want to clarify for the members, the audience, and around this table who have been expecting or under the impression that because these are dedicated funds, members, no general funds go to the airport fund. They're all user fees. And leadership at the last hour last year swept $15 million back out of this account once again and mixed it in the general fund. Now, Mr. Hankel, I was led to believe that the $2.25 million that was coming back into the fund was actually found money somewhere else in the general fund that was coming back to help repay a portion of that. That's the first part of my question. Can you clarify that for me?
Mr. Hankel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, this is money that's available in the fund balance of the state airports fund. And it is a one-time appropriation because it's not sustainable at current fund balance levels for the airports fund. So it's something that we thought was manageable and affordable and therefore a one-time appropriation at this point in time. It is from the state airports fund, not from the general fund.
Thank you. I wanted that clarification because really, members, what we have here is we have money in our checkbook that they're telling us we're allowed to spend on the airport fund. So the money is already dedicated money from the aviation community that's in the airport piggy bank, and you're just giving us the authority to spend it on 2009 stuff. So
yes.
Just so we're clear that this is not a part of the payback of $15 million that some of us are looking for from the general fund.
Thank you, Representative Beard. And also for the members, Representative Beard pointed out, Mr. Hankel, the committee for the new members has to authorize that expenditure, so there will be a bill coming through which basically authorizes them to spend that money. They just can't automatically do it, and I think a lot of you may not be aware of that, but that's the way it works.
Mr. Chairman, members, before I move to the transit activities, I simply wanted to introduce Gary Workman, who is currently the director of the Office of Aeronautics. Gary is behind me, and I wanted everybody to know his face, if you could wave. In case you have questions along the way, Gary is available to you for specific questions.
Mr. Hankel, too, could I just ask for the committee, how many planes does the state have?
Four current planes.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Beard.
Perhaps a little clarification would be ordered, Mr. Hankel, because the Department of Aeronautics actually controls four airplanes, their own four planes that are available for general use by committees and by the administration and so on and so forth. DNR and the Minnesota Highway Patrol also have a fleet of aircraft that I don't believe are under the direct control of Minnesota DOT. But that number is somewhere near 30, I think, if you add them all together or something like that.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members, I will move to the next area, which is the transit activities. The next slide, you'll note that in the budget book, it is page 24, if you need that as a reference. Quickly going through the transit activities, you can see that the first activity in the transit area is the transit system investment and planning, including passenger rail. This area is responsible for developing comprehensive passenger rail plans as well as providing grants to the providers across the state for services that are provided in rural Minnesota. Second is the transit operations and maintenance. this activity is responsible for activities that support commuter bus projects across rural Minnesota, again, for operations, equipment, stations, park and rides, etc. Third activity is transit administration. This is the internal workings of the Office of Transit, responsible for the management, administration, and support and coordination of those grant activities and those planning activities across rural Minnesota. And finally, the bicycle and pedestrian activities, which provide bike and ped facilities and assure that those bike and ped facilities are a part of the transportation projects that are developed across the state. Looking at the funding sources, you can see that there again are direct appropriations as well as statutory appropriations. Under the direct appropriations, we're looking at $18.8 million base coming from the general fund. And then there is a small portion that comes from the Trunk Highway Fund, which is a base of $0.775 million. On the statutory side, you can see the appropriations include MVEST as well as federal sources of funding. MVEST projections for fiscal year 2010 are approximately $15 million. That's the current estimate, wrapping up by fiscal year 2011 at an estimated $18 million. You can see that we are looking at about $147 million worth of federal grants for fiscal years 2010 and 11, and please note that a portion of that figure today does include the grants available for the North Star construction project that's moving forward currently. Moving to one of the change items for the transit activities is a proposed reduction by the governor of $1.924 million per year, or approximately 10%, to help with addressing the state's general fund deficit. So this is a general fund reduction proposal. We have looked at the impacts of that general fund proposal, and given the MVEST phase-in, which provides additional resources, a ramp-up in fiscal years 2010 and 2011, we believe that even with that general fund reduction, we can sustain existing levels of service into those future years. And that is the proposal. You can see more details on page 13 if you want to look into that in more detail.
Representative Morrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hankel, thank you for the information. And I know you guys had a chance to talk about this, but if not for the record, at least for committee members who maybe not heard me go on about what's going on with Greater Minnesota Transit. So I have a couple of quick questions. The documents on page 13 mention that the goal of Greater Minnesota Transit Plan is to meet 80% of transit service need by 2010. What percentage of service need is being met now?
Mr. Hankel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrell, I think this is a good time to introduce you to Mr. Mike Shadow.
I said that the other day as well, Mr. Hankel.
Mike is the director of the Office of Transit. Mike replaces retiring Donna Allen, and if I could invite him to the table, I think he can address that question directly.
Mr. Chair, as Mike's coming to the table, I just wanted to comment on this 10% number, too, because I think it would be interesting. The $1.9 million is approximately 10% of our general fund direct appropriation. But an interesting thing has happened to help us in our delivery of Greater Minnesota Transit services and expansion of those services, and that, of course, is MVEST being contributing a significant contributing factor. And I just wanted to point out that by 2011, that MVEST is half or slightly greater than half of our total funding for Greater Minnesota Transit, and that's a scenario that is more akin to what we've seen with MET Transit services, where they're more heavily reliant on MVEST funding. Historically, Greater Minnesota Transit, we've relied on the general fund direct appropriation, but with the passage of the MVEST amendment and the phase-in of MVEST funds, a portion of those proceeds went to Greater Minnesota Transit. So the 10% might be overstating it if you asked about how much the impact is in terms of revenue loss. It's more akin to 5%. It's still significant, But the 10% is a direct, relates to the direct appropriation and not to the total revenues. So more accurately, the total revenue source reduction impact is 5%. But I'll let Mr. Schadauer get to your question tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Schadauer.
Mr. Chair, my name is Mike Schadauer. I'm the director of the Office of Transit at MnDOT. Representative Moreau, the answer to your question for calendar year 2009 is about 70%.
Okay.
We would meet about 1.03 million hours of service out of the target goal for 80% of needs of 1.35 million hours of service.
You have a follow-up?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. If I could just make sure I understand then that number. The goal is to meet 80% of need by next fiscal year, 2010. Will we meet 80% of need in greater Minnesota in 2010?
Mr. Schadauer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Moreau, no, we will not.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up Mr. Gray, the New York Times today is reporting, I believe the word is abysmal, that auto sales in the U.S. are abysmal for the beginning of 2009. Would that have an impact upon MVEF revenues if auto sales are abysmal?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, we've already seen at least some of that impact, and as a little bit of brief history for the members, I believe that this year's MVEF forecast is in the low $400 million. At one point in time, as recently as maybe 4 years ago, that source was thought to be contributing $620 plus million in that range as a revenue source to the state. So yes, abysmal auto sales will continue to have an impact. We will, of course, await the February forecast to see if there's a further ratcheting down. But in the last two forecasts, we've taken a considerable hit in the MVEF revenue forecast. Though I will say that oddly enough, with the fiscal 08, we actually beat the MVEF revenue forecast for the February timeframe. But that said, we did take another reduction in November, and based on some of the comments I've seen Mr. Stinson making, I think he's not looking with great optimism towards the February forecast relative to MVEF.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Now, I know we're going to talk about the state transit plan at another venue. I am deeply, deeply concerned about this proposal to cut Greater Minnesota Transit when it's already behind the need projections that MnDOT established. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hollingsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the metro area, we do that local effort through the transit taxing district. How does that local effort get done in Greater Minnesota?
Mr. Schadauer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the local effort on the rural transit like this in Greater Minnesota comes from a variety of sources. It can come from fare box. It can come from property taxes. It can come from other operating revenues that a transit provider might gain from contract services or advertising.
And Mr. Chair, so that would happen on the local level? They just make a determination on the local level?
Representative Hausman, that's correct.
Do they have the same rule that applies to fare box recovery that Metro Transit does?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, no, it's not the same. The requirement is, it varies by system, but it's either 80 or 85% subsidy from state and local, or state and federal sources. They have to provide between 15 and 20%, either 15 or 20% or more, depending on the system.
And that was the number maybe I didn't get the other day. So what I'm hearing is the 80 to 85% subsidy from state and federal.
Correct.
Thank you.
If I may clarify that, many times local sources do provide more than that amount. That's the minimum.
Okay. No further questions? You may proceed. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll move then to the freight activity and funding discussion. You'll note that page 28 is the MnDOT budget manual reference. The activities in the freight area include rail and port programs. This is administration of the MRSI program, the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, as well as the Port Development Assistance Program. The second area, the grade crossing and rail safety, is the administration of those construction projects necessary to improve safety for highway rail grade crossings. Third bullet, freight planning, is the activity which results in the development of plans and information to support the integrated system of freight across the state of Minnesota. The next bullet, the oversized overweight permit activity, is the activity that provides single trip and annual permit authorization for movement of those oversized and overweight vehicles in the state of Minnesota. So it is the permitting process required to ensure that the infrastructure is being protected from those oversized and overweight vehicles. And finally, an activity bullet that says motor carrier education, credentials, and safety evaluation. Pretty straightforward, the activity of providing information, educating, making sure that we have inspection personnel responsible for the safety evaluations is carried out through those activities. Again, we have direct appropriations as well as statutory appropriations for those activities. The direct appropriations, 0.365, a very small amount coming from the general fund. And so that is a base, as well as the direct appropriation of $4.9 million in trunk highway funds per year. On the statutory side, $12.8 million in federal funds, which includes the rail and motor carrier safety area, and then $4.3 million of special revenues, which includes the Minnesota Service Improvement Program, as well as the grade crossing area. For this activity, there are no change items that are being requested by the governor.
Mr. Chair, I did want to piggyback. In each of the modal areas, aeronautics, transit, and freight, we've identified statutory appropriations. The biggest leader or number has been federal funds. And I did want to point out that for this committee, that something's a little bit unique about MnDOT or transportation federal funds is that the Trunk Highway Fund, which is our 800-pound gorilla, if you will, the federal funds are directly appropriated by the legislature to the Trunk Highway Fund. For the modal offices, which still rely significantly on federal funds, including in the range of $150 to $200 million for aeronautics, a similar amount in the lower scale for both transit and freight, albeit the North Star is another example. Those funds are statutory appropriations and were really a grant pass-through mechanism, which is more consistent with all the other agencies that you'll probably be hearing in other committees in terms of their budget development. But we do highlight the fact that there's a considerable source of federal funds that go through our modal offices as well, but they are not directly appropriated to them. They are more of a pass-through, if you will, grant management function.
Mr. Gray, how much do the overweight permits generates if you do every spring or during road restrictions? Do you have an idea?
Mr. Chair, I have an idea, but I hazard that it might be wrong, so I will get that information to the committee. It's a relatively modest amount, quite candidly, but it is several. I don't want to guess. I will get that information to the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, before I hand the mic back to Mr. Gray, I just wanted to introduce Cecil Selness. Cecil is the director of this office, responsible for the activities, and he is over here in the blue suit. If you ever need to contact him for information on anything that's been presented here today.
Mr. Henkel, too, before you go, and I see if Mr. Selness is here, there are two studies going on now, a rail and a freight study. That's right. When are they, when will they be completed?
Mr. Chairman, you're referring to two studies that will be occurring in the freight area. One study is for the northern tier of the District 1 MnDOT area of Minnesota, as well as the Redwood, it's the east, the western side of Minnesota, more of District 2 and that area. That study is intended to understand the freight trends in the state of Minnesota and to begin to identify needs and priorities for investments. Those studies should be completed this fiscal year, this calendar year. We should have results from those studies available for the next legislative session, as well as an opportunity to say that we are working aggressively to meet the legislative requirement for the state rail, freight and rail, passenger rail plan. And we are just getting ready to select a consultant. That study will be completed this calendar year as well, with a report to you prior to the next session.
Okay, thank you.
If there are any more questions, Mr. Chair, I'll hand it back to Mr. Gray.
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Tim and I flipped for this slide, and I lost. So, bear with me. State roads, I referenced page 34 in your budget narrative, in case you're following along. Technically, we have three programs, sub-programs within state roads, one being infrastructure investment and planning, more commonly referred to as our construction and program delivery account. This is the program that covers our statewide system planning and integration. It's the area that we really focus our program delivery, our construction planning and design, pre-design, final design, implementation, our construction project management and contract administration. It's a very significant piece of our puzzle. To support the operation and planning side of our work and the program delivery side, historically there's been any time we've increased the state road construction program or had a significant bond authorization such as the last Chapter 152 passage, there's been money set aside to recognize that there's a program delivery element to bring a project to fruition. So this is a big piece of that is are those types of activities. In addition, as I mentioned, this is the where the legislature appropriates to us the state road construction. These are the construction and right-of-way purchases, the actual project costs related to all the projects you see across the state. And then a more recent significant event has been the use of bonds to advance and accelerate project delivery and usability by our businesses and citizens, and that's the highway debt service portion. So those are the pieces of the puzzle that make up this infrastructure planning and delivery account within state roads. To give you a sense of the magnitude, our direct appropriations total almost $2 billion for the biennium. And there is a little bit of up and down here, $896 million in 10 and just over $1 billion in 11. To give you a little bit of the breakout, there's some of the key categories. These program delivery and system planning and integration functions are approximately $200 million of those amounts, and that is a base adjustment. The debt service amount is is forecasted as of the past November forecast is approximately $100 million in 10 and $150 million in 11. The balance, the significant majority of this appropriation is for the construction and right-of-way of projects throughout the state, as I mentioned. And that is $591 million in 10, growing to $679 in 11. And the base, however, the ongoing base number is $635 million, which is essentially directly in the middle of those two. And the main reason for the timing difference is reflects when projects are ready and when the federal revenues are available to be utilized. So there is some up and down here relative to project readiness and the timing and availability and usage of federal funds. However, the ongoing base is $635 million. That is approximately an $82 million increase from past years, and it essentially is all on our federal revenue side and reflects the fact that the Safe T-Lou is in its final years and its most robust years of federal revenues being returned to the state. So it's a significant piece of our puzzle. Statutory appropriations, we do have some things that are a little bit unique to the Trunk Highway Fund. I mentioned that federal revenues are in our direct appropriations. There are some things that are a little bit different too. One is shared construction revenue. That's where we partner with local entities, counties, and municipal governmental units. And we service the pass-through for funding that helps do one project, but it's their share of the funding that's relative to that. And then there are some revenues over the course of the biennium that support research and safety and other non-formula federal funds from the FHWA. We have essentially two change requests or change items.
Excuse me, Mr. Gray, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, talked about the increase in the state road construction being almost all federal money, did you say, coming down the pike?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, that's correct.
I'm curious as to how much or if we're seeing yet the impact of the motor vehicle sales tax, the portion that stays in the trunk highway fund, and the gas tax that started blinking on here when last fall, last summer. Have we seen anything with that, or is the decrease in flowage and purchases sort of blanking that out?
Sorry. Mr. Chair and members, we are seeing that, but if you recall, when I was when we went through on a quick basis the overview, there are two key things that are being funded with the increased revenues being generated by the motor fuel tax and MBEF, which are the two biggest pieces of the puzzle, if you will. Motor tab fees, if you will, along with MBEF being the third piece. Those are being the direct appropriations as part of the transportation bill to support increased investment in program delivery activities, maintenance and operations activities, and to fund the debt service. So the early years of the revenue increases are really going to offset those direct appropriation increases and to fund the debt service. We are hopeful that if the revenue story changes and gets a little bit brighter as opposed to abysmal, I think that we'll indeed see some future benefits where we'll have some monies that would essentially flow through to the bottom line. It would be appropriatable by the committee at that time. But we're not in that position now. So this does reflect really a federal, real increase in federal revenues that are associated with the final years of Safe T Lou.
Okay, thank you.
I think I've kind of stole the thunder for this first point, members, and that is that we are asking for the ability to increase our SSD appropriation to reflect a higher level of federal funds, and that's approximately $83 million, and that is growing from our current base of $550 million to approximately $635 million, so a little bit of rounding in there. Those are real federal revenues, and we are, if you will, programmed to that level. So as we look ahead and try to send out guidance to our area transportation partnerships and to plan our STIPs and long-term funding plans, we do rely on this level of federal income. As I noted to the committee, there is some element of risk here because the Federal Highway Trust Fund has some challenges of its own. But we'd rather not pull the rug out from underneath our program yet and see how this plays out through reauthorization and the next couple rounds at the federal level.
I have a question, Representative Nelson.
Over here.
The State Road Construction Appropriation Authority, do you need that increased to deal with the federal money coming in from the stimulus package also, or does that include that, or...
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that's a good question. No, it does not include the potential funds that we may receive from any economic stimulus package. And yes, we would need subsequent authority to spend that. Again, the Trunk Highway Fund is unique in that it's the federal funds aren't a pass-through, so this body would be part of appropriating that amount. And at this point in time, I think there are bills that are both in the House and the Senate that have some language in anticipation of a stimulus bill, but we would have to feed the amounts and some of the parameters to that bill. But at this point in time, this is what we would refer to as our regular state road construction program.
Mr. Gray, I was also curious, when you said there was basically an increase in the state road construction, basically due to federal funds, but I would presume either we had a great decline, but there must have been some impact of the additional money that came in from Chapter 152, because that did have an impact this last year, but not a total impact.
Mr. Chair, you're correct. And again, I think what I'd summarize Chapter 152 in the early years is allowing us to make commitments knowing that we're going to have increased levels of debt service. And there was a very significant element that helped us to fund, to sustain and expand our operations and maintenance activities, as well as be able to deliver this higher level of program and deliver approximately $1.7 billion of bonds, many of which are front-loaded into that bill. So there's a significant program delivery component that those revenues, those increased revenues, are supporting.
it actually spread throughout the other sections rather than straight the state road count. Okay.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We kind of treat the revenue line as one bucket when it comes in, but the fact is the bucket is bigger because of the passage of the bill. Secondly, I mentioned this reduced FSC by $44 million in 2009. That is strictly the accounting adjustment, recognizing that we've already decided that we don't need to borrow through federal advanced construction financing $44 million in revenues. We can deliver the program with our own revenue stream. And this is the forecast, as I mentioned, unfortunately only allows you to show the decline in revenues. It does not, by law, allow you to show that there's a corresponding decline in appropriation requirements. So this is to wash out that it's a zero impact to the program, zero impact to the fund balance. So it's a technical accounting adjustment, even though it's a big number. And I think that, as I mentioned, when we talked about the forecast, quite frankly, we're managing our federal advanced construction financing even more tightly and rigorously than before, and we're in a position to do that with the additional funding in the bigger program. So that's an 09 adjustment. Moving to 10 and 11, we do have some challenges with the fund balance line. The decline in revenue streams and was a significant factor, taking out approximately $60 million in state revenues, of which $40 million is the state trunk highway fund share for 10 and 11. That does put us in a kind of a break-even mode. This $2 million is to reflect that we need that much of a reduction in spending authority to have a positive fund balance before the 10-11 biennium, which is a requirement under state law. At this time, I'm going to have our Assistant Operations Division Director come to the table, Sue Mulvihill, and talk us through a very important visible component of state roads, the second program, Maintenance and Operations.
Welcome.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm Sue Mulvihill. I'm the Assistant Division Director for the Operations Division for MnDOT, which represents all eight of the MnDOT districts. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm going to talk a little bit about the products and services that we provide, a little bit about our funding, and then just a small change that is happening to us this year. We exist to maintain, operate, and preserve the trunk highway and interstate system across the state of Minnesota. And we basically impact all roadway users, motorists, transit, freight, everybody that has to drive on a highway or an interstate across the state uses our services. You can see there, it starts on page 38 of the big booklet, but on this slide you can see there are eight different areas that we're going to talk a little bit about today, starting with smooth roads. Smooth roads is our pavement preservation and patching activity and replacement and repair of road surfaces so that we can be hopefully pothole free, which you'll see it takes a lot of work in the spring, but it just basically takes care of the infrastructure, the highway system, and the road surface. Clear roads is actually our snow and ice measure and our debris removal. You may be interested to know that in the metro area we have a lot of different kinds of debris that end up in the middle of the freeway system during different parts of the day, and we have a dedicated staff that actually goes around and makes sure they take care of those as soon as they can, including the first responders that help with that. So if that's a bare lane, snow and ice, and debris removal across the highways of the state. We have a traffic management system that's comprised of several different items. Pavement markings and signing for the transportation system is something that we use to help folks get around. And one of our measures for pavement markings is a 365-day visible pavement marking and stripe so that people know where they should be driving on the surface of the roadway. We have an incident clearance time, which means if you have an incident in specifically the metro area, which impacts a lot more traffic, we have goals and measures to make sure that we clear those incidents quickly, and the goal is actually 35 minutes. We also measure the duration and extent of congestion every day in the metro area, and it's really specifically for peak hours, and our measure is whether or not we're below 45 miles an hour. So we try to make sure that we manage traffic to ease congestion and make mobility better across the state. our roadside area has to deal with everything that's outside of the 24 middle feet of the roadway and the shoulder surface. It's the mowing, the planting, noxious weed control, which is a mandated thing, and then litter pickup and adopt the highway services and rest areas that are part of our roadside function. Bridges, we inspect bridges, we repair bridges, we do reactive and preventive maintenance on bridges across the state, and there are many individuals involved in that function for the operations and maintenance group. We have regulations, which essentially is our permitting offices across the state, and we do probably a few thousand permits a year for different utilities or companies that want to do some type of work on the roadway system, so we manage that function. And then we have fleet and facility management and inventory control. MnDOT has a very large fleet of vehicles, and we try to manage that as effectively as we can because it's a large investment in equipment and vehicles, so we take care of that as well as we can. We also have many facilities, and we're involved in repair and fixing up of those facilities and making sure we take care of that infrastructure that belongs to the state. And our inventory control system, we have a computerized system that manages inventory, but we basically take in what we purchase and make sure that we target against the products and services that we exist to provide for the citizens of Minnesota. So you can see direct appropriations, there is about $255 million a year out of the Trunk Highway Fund. And then the statutory appropriations is about $12 million of federal money, a lot of which is safety related, towards zero death kind of things, or seatbelt incentive types of things to improve safety on Minnesota's highways. The one change item that I have here to talk about today goes along with Kevin's discussion a little bit about the $2 million that came from the program delivery portion, is just to take $2.5 million each fiscal year out of the operations and maintenance appropriation to help balance the funds balance.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Mulvihill? Mulvihill, sorry. On the previous slide, you had the numbers there for seatbelt. Is the state of Minnesota losing any federal funds because we've not enacted a primary seatbelt law?
Yes, Mulvihill.
Mr. Chair, that's your name. No, I don't believe so. I think that we've had voluntary compliance in the... I think the strike figure might be we're up to 85%. So at this point in time, I think that we have not been excluded or penalized for not having primary seatbelt. I'd have to confirm that, but my understanding is no. And if it's different, I will advise the committee, but I don't believe so at this point in time because of our voluntary compliance track record.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that there is a federal chunk of money that we get if we do enact primary. At least in all the previous years, we've had it on the floor. There's been money attached, so I think that's a Department of Public Safety question. It was $8 million in the last biennium. It decreases over time as other states get a bigger share, but I don't know that any of that goes to you. I think it goes all to Campion. I'm not sure. But my question is on the cut by the $2.5 million per year, in what areas of operations and maintenance do you see cutting back services to accommodate that general fund cut?
Mr. Gray?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hartman, we're hopeful not to have to cut any areas, and let me explain. One of the things that we did when we established or received the appropriation authority from Chapter 152 is that as part of our financial management and planning, we set aside approximately $6 million in anticipation of revenue stress. And unfortunately, that proved to be an appropriate set-aside. So it's a loss in the sense it's 2.5 million services that we can't continue to expand or over time as prices impact us and erode our purchasing power isn't available. But at this point in time, we're taking that from what I would call our risk reserves, and we were fortunate to set that aside. I guess it's debatable if we should have invested it all immediately, but I think that we had some pretty good sense that there was some economic woes on the horizon, if you will. And so at this point in time, the $2 million from the program delivery slide that Sue and I referenced, as well as this $4.5 million per year, or $9 million for the biennium, helped us to achieve a positive fund balance. I would say that's a precarious position to be in from a true fiscal planning standpoint. It's not the healthiest positions, but to be positive in these times is almost a win. So we may have some adjustments depending upon the February forecast, but we're hopeful that we can minimize the impacts and then work to build and restore fund balance as we go forward.
Just to follow up, I was hoping you'd say you weren't going to mow or use weed killer anymore, but apparently you planned well.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what I'm hearing. It sounds like you're using money from the Trunk Highway Fund to make a transfer to the general fund to help balance the budget. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, I'm sorry. I tend to get very kind of parochial about the Trunk Highway Fund. The Trunk Highway Fund is a constitutionally dedicated fund, and all the appropriations we're talking about in the state roads programs are to the Trunk Highway Fund and not the general fund. So this is us managing, if you will, along with the Department of Finance, the fund balance of the Trunk Highway Fund. It's not available to help manage the general fund deficit balance, and it's strictly unique to the Trunk Highway Fund. So I'm sorry for using fund balance so generically, because this is unique to the Trunk Highway Fund, and it has no interaction or transfer back and forth from the or to the general fund.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to respond to Representative Hortman, I don't want to get in a fight with her on the floor. Mom might be watching on TV. But I think Mr. Gray is right, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding, anyway, that there's a two-year period to look back, and there is a set percentage of use that triggers the withholding of federal funds for seat belts, and that Minnesota is higher than that level. So if we could get that information, I'd appreciate it, so I don't have to say anything on the floor about it.
Mr. Chair, we'll certainly provide that information, and it may be that both of you are right. I think that we haven't been penalized, but maybe we didn't have the opportunity to participate in a pool where there might have been some additional monies we could have received. So it may be more than semantics, but less than a clear black and white right or wrong on either part. But our traffic and safety folks have that information at their fingertips, and we'll get it to post-haste.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That the list that MnDOT distributed the other day when we had that joint meeting, and it was specifically talking about federal stimulus dollars, that is a list above and beyond what's normally programmed. Is that correct?
Mr. Gray?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, absolutely. That is
so
an above and beyond.
Somebody didn't see their project on there, it didn't mean it's not getting done. It's just it's not going to get done with federal stimulus dollars.
Mr. Gray?
Mr. Chair, maybe a couple of situations. One is it's an illustrative list. I think we're still a list in progress. I think that's important. I think number two, that it may or may not be in a regular program, or there may be some ripple effects as well, as if we get additional federal monies and are able to accelerate existing projects or new projects that are outside of our current plans, either in the SIP or long-range plans. I think we'll have some more, if you will, flexibility or maneuvering to reassessment, if you will, as a result of these funds when and if they come to fruition. So I think the list is illustrative, and I'd hate to see it as all-inclusive or all-exclusive at this point in time.
But, Mr. Chair, just to clarify then, there really are, there's your regular programmed project, and then there is some larger list that you're talking about with federal stimulus dollars.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
Ms. Morrillville? Is that? Are there any rest areas that are still are closed or not operational?
Mr. Chair, I believe that there's still one that's closed up along I-35. I can't remember the place. It's about halfway between here and Cloquet, I want to say. But we are looking at reopening that one. It's a level one rest area, full service. There may be others, but that's the one that I know about.
Yeah, thank you. No further questions. Mr. Gray may continue.
Mr. Chair and members, the third piece of the state roads program is electronic communications, and there's a more extensive summary on page 45. Julie Stallman, who is director of state and local aid, is here as well, and this is one of her areas, and she'll talk to this a bit, and as well as the local road program, which follows after this.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The electronic communications, their particular duty is to construct, to operate, and maintain the ARMOR radio system. That's the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response. It serves MnDOT, the State Patrol, the DNR, the National Weather Service, local agencies, and others who choose to use our services. In the big book, it's on page 48, that's where the money that we're talking about is. There's $5.2 million of trunk highway funds that are used for both the MnDOT services and the State Patrol. Then you'll see that there is a miscellaneous special revenue, $469,000. That is what the DNR gives to us to maintain their service on our radio network. There is a $625 deposit into the Trunk Highway Fund. That's everybody else. That's where we collect the money from the National Weather Service. If there's a county or a city that we're doing some services for, any other state agencies beyond the DNR or the State Patrol, that money is deposited there. And then the last one, the $2.6 million, is from the 911 fees. I'm not sure if you're aware, but when we started to build this Allied Radio Matrix, we were approved to put on a fee of 65 cents per line to 911 fees. We are using that money to operate and maintain the system. By the time the whole thing is built, we expect to be at 90 cents per line, and that is but that's not until we're complete. And this whole system should be completely constructed by 2012. Right now we are about 25% or so. We have it completely in the metropolitan area, and we are expanding out. We have it in St. Cloud. What we're finding is that as we move around the state and we start to design our tower system out there, we find that everybody who is there says, we want on, please come to our area first. And so we are trying to go as fast as we can. We're sure we'll be done by 2012. We might be done a little bit earlier. We actually have counties like Itasca who said, we're not going to wait for you to come and build the towers. We're going to build them now, and then you can buy them from us when you're ready to come to us. That's how excited people are about having this public safety radio network there. If there are no questions on the radio network, I'll move to the local road program. Okay, that in the larger book begins on page 49. For those of you who haven't listened to me do the same presentation for the last at least five budget cycles, these are the county and city state aid roads. It is not every county road. It is not every city street. It's 30,000 miles on the county system, so it's the highest level of county roads that you're driving out there. And in the city streets, it's limited to 20%. So most of the city streets that you see out there are not part of the state aid system. It's about 3,000 miles in the entire state, and it is only in cities that have a population of 5,000 or more.
Excuse me, we had a question, Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I didn't get the question out quick enough. We were talking about the electronic communications, but Ms. Gallman, how many dispatch centers does MnDOT and Public Service have now across the state? And then number two, are you planning on some changes there, or what's your thoughts with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that we have a TOCC or dispatch center that's shared with the State Patrol in each of the districts. Maybe there's two in a couple, but I believe each of the districts. And then, of course, our central metro facility, the Regional Transit Management Center, which is based in Roseville, and that has a dedicated state dispatch function and a dedicated MnDOT maintenance and traffic operations function. So I think I'd call it eight, and we can get that information to you, but I do believe that we've worked hard to partner with the State Patrol in each of our districts to have a shared dispatch facility.
Representative Reinhart had a question.
Thank you, Chair. Just a point of curiosity, as Council President, I appointed someone to a Joint Powers Task Force on Emergency Radio Communications. Was it related to this initiative coming out of MnDOT? It was a coalition of folks, governmental entities in northeastern Minnesota, and this is sounding familiar.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't believe that is directly related to this function. I think that is a joint powers agreement where they are looking at the consolidation of dispatch centers for the State Patrol and as well as at the county and police levels and things of that nature. I think there's probably a number of those activities, but this one I happen to know because I have a friend who's a member of my church who's one of the consultants being used to look into that potential consolidation. So I think they're looking for opportunities to contract the number of centers and be most efficient in terms of dispatch elements throughout the state.
Mr. Chair, so the infrastructure and the functionality are not necessarily linked in this case.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not necessarily. I think that we'll see the potential for sharing infrastructure as well as interoperability in the future. But I think it would be a step forward just to have towers in the right site that even if there's not interoperability, there'll be shared operability. And I'm already out of my engineering electronic domain there. In fact, the folks behind me probably would have said I was out of that element a while ago. But not to be flip, Julie or Mark Musikius, who are Director of Electronic Communications, would be available, and certainly I would connect you with them if you have any follow-up questions. I think it's based on the Governor's budget message and looking at shared services and opportunities and to use technology to help stretch our dollars further. I think these are all good things to look at.
Ms. Goldman, our time runs till 6 o'clock, if that will help you.
I can talk really fast. Thank you. I am now on page 51. I mentioned that the county state aid system is about 30,000 miles. For those of you aware of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, or often called the gas tax, 29% of it goes to the county state aid highway system. The counties themselves use it for maintenance and construction of those miles, generally to improve safety and structural capacity in the rural areas. In the metropolitan areas, it's most often safety and capacity improvements. Again, I want to reiterate, it is the counties who choose the construction projects and the counties that perform the maintenance. The actual funding is shown on page 54. Most the money for the county state aid system, as well as the 5% of the money that comes off the top of the Highway User Fund, runs through the CASA account, and so that's why it shows $505 million. Once we take out the flexible fund, it is actually $427 million that is distributed to the counties for construction and maintenance. That always attracts somebody's attention. They go, why does it say 505, but we get 427? It's because we run the money through the CASA account.
Excuse me, we have a question for Brooklyn Hortman.
Thank you. Maybe you're getting to this. Maybe I'm jumping ahead of where you are. I thought you might be moving to municipal. But when you appropriate the money to the counties through the CASA, do you put any guidelines on what proportion is used for construction and what proportion is used for operations and maintenance, or can a county use that money however they would like?
Ms. Garman?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is in the state aid rules a split that says 60% shall be used for construction, 40% can be used for maintenance. If you do not use 40% for maintenance, it automatically rolls into next year's construction account. But our state aid rules also allow a variance process. So if a county says we want to use more than 40% for maintenance, they could ask the commissioner for a variance to that and increase that amount or decrease it. We've never had anyone ask for it, but there is a process that allows that.
You may proceed.
Okay, thank you. This is also on page 54. It shows $11.5 million. That is where the money to operate my office budget comes. It also is the money that is for research for a disaster fund that we keep in place in case some disaster happens on the state aid system. And there's also about a $3 million of that that goes to the DNR to be used on identified park road projects. I had mentioned that there was the 5% off the top. That is the place where we do turnback projects, pieces of trunk highway that used to be on the trunk highway system, and now we've determined that the appropriate jurisdiction is with a county or a city. The money to put it into a reasonable system or condition so that a county is willing to accept it onto their state aid system exists there. In 2010, about $33 million of it will be used on CASA turnbacks and about $8.5 million on municipal state aid turnbacks. The CASA is about three quarters of it is in the metropolitan area. That's where we've had a lot of turnback roads in the recent past. All of the municipal state aid turnbacks for the next couple of years will be outstate, smaller cities outstate.
Ms. Stallman, is there a waiting list on the turnback or not?
We have a plan in the metropolitan area that takes us out to about 2020 for turnback projects, particularly on the CASA system. It's not really appropriate, I don't think, to call it a waiting list so much as a planned construction list. Certainly there are counties who would do the projects faster if there were enough money to do it, but for the most part, they've kind of agreed with each other and said, okay, Ramsey will take this money first, Carver will wait for this project, and they've timed it out. So we have a pretty structured program. And for the most part, they're satisfied. And then in addition, in the flexible fund, there's also the money that goes to the townships for the town road account and the town bridge account. And together, that's about $35 million. That is the CASA account. I'm going to move to MFAS unless there's a question on the CASA.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Goldman, can you use state highway funds for replacement of utilities in municipal areas? Or do you have to use municipal state aid funds to do that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I have the question right. If there are utilities underneath a CASA and they're doing a project, if they need to replace the utilities because of the work that's happening to the road, then you can use your county state aid funds to do it. But if it's just convenient because they have the road open and the city says we want to replace them now, no, they cannot. They would have to use local funds to do that.
Thank you.
That completes yours, Ms. Garman?
Nope.
You have the general support, too.
30 seconds on the municipal state aid fund. That is on page 57. Just letting you know, nothing extra runs through there. There's $136 million that is given to the cities over $5,000 for construction and maintenance, and then there's a $3.5 million for my office budget for research, the same kind of things we were talking about. This is where the change request is in the state aid fund. We have worked with the cities, both the city engineers and the League of Minnesota Cities, and they have agreed to increase the set aside for the administrative account from 1.5% to 2%. We had that change in the CASA account several years ago, and we have been able to use that money to do some statewide priorities. We do statewide treatment testing. We've done some software purchase of construction documentation, and the cities have now said, We want that too. You can take advantage of all of us buying something together and getting that service cheaper, and so they are supporting the change from 1.5% to 2%.
Ms. Goldman, are you still carrying a large reserve in the municipal account or not at the end of the year?
Mr. Chair, we have a reserve, but it's less than 1 year's apportionment. So it's to the point now where what they have is basically saved up, because they know they have a project that they're going to let in the spring. They have to have the money in the bank.
Yep, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would just point out, too, that there's some continued growth in the funds that are a direct reflection of the passage of Chapter 152. So there is a benefit or a significant impact positively to the counties and cities as well. Lastly, in the purposes of time management, I'll cover the general support and services. This is the smallest part of our budget, arguably. It's, as you see, the direct appropriations are only $62 million, and about, I would say, almost 30% of those or more are related to buildings. But it's for department leadership, historically private sector might call back office functions of finance and communication and technology. As I mentioned, it certainly supports our workforce management administration, and also has an element for both building expansion, which we dedicate approximately $4.5 million a year to, and a facilities program that's probably in the range of $8 to $12 million to maintain the many sites we have. In fact, we have over 1,000 buildings and over 5 million square feet. So we're a significant player, if you will, in terms of having across the state a number of buildings that our people operate out of, both from a service standpoint and a operations and maintenance delivery standpoint. And again, that direct appropriation, there's no change requested. That's approximately just over $60 million.
Rep. Finn Morrow had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, I'm just being slow, so I apologize. If you would look at page 61, please. I just need some help in understanding what numbers go where and what they represent. On page 61, we have a pie chart. For example, department leadership, 14%. I'm then looking at both, I suppose I could look at page 59 or page 62. I'm trying to figure out 14% of what number?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, thanks for grabbing onto that chart. I believe it's the $44 million excludes buildings. So I think that if you're looking at 14% for agency leadership and administration, the CO function, if you will, be 14% of $44 million. I think the split of the 62 is $18 million towards buildings and $44 million towards staff and facilities and resources throughout the state. So it includes leadership from the districts and offices, as well as what we call typically the building class street, the CO function. But I think that's of the more modest number. The general support number of 49% would be all administration, you know, from the reception desk and information desk right on up to the executive assistants to staff and clerical support across the agency. So it would be of the $44 million, and approximately $18 million is of the amount that's related to buildings.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Gray, thank you. That's helpful. On page 60, it describes department leadership and management services, as including strategic planning, policy, and the like. Do I understand correctly that that description describes department leadership, the 14%? So, in other words, compensation is not included in department leadership as shown on page 60 and 61.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it would include compensation as well.
The 14%.
Correct. In fact, approximately 70% of the $44 million, or 45% of the total amount, is compensation. We're a people-intensive business, but I believe it's approximately, if you look on page 62, you'll see a expenditure by category, and it demonstrates that there's approximately $30 million of compensation that is planned or budgeted for, at least. We've been fortunate to not quite hit that target and redirect those resources to other priorities in the past, but that's what's set aside in the budget.
Pat, finish your...
Well, Mr. Chair, that does finish. I just wanted to point out that the budget is online for those of you that want to be able to access it independently and remotely. My contact information, as well as that of Norm Foster, and you'll have to ask him what the S and J stand for, but it being English, it sounds very regal. I also wanted to point out that Mr. Foster has been a mainstay over at the Department of Finance for the last, I don't know how many years, is now a part of MnDOT. We're very fortunate to have him on board. Or if there are any other questions, don't hesitate to contact Scott Peterson or Eric Levine of our Office of Government Affairs.
Ripson Morrill had a question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I had tried to confirm with MnDOT. I had a separate question that was related to an earlier point, and I understand now that we don't plan to cover this in the future. We have the commissioner here, and Mr. Chair, I've been informed that under the 20-year plan, that at least the advice from the central office is that a great bulk of the money should be spent on preservation of roads and perhaps 5% on what might be called non-preservation, maybe that's called expansion. And I'm concerned when I hear that with 95 and 5% figures for the 20-year plan. Mr. Chair, I know that it's not about this, but we have the people here, and I understand now there's not a plan to ask this question in another form. I'd like to know, does the 20-year plan lay out 95% of highway funds or road funds going into preservation and 5% to non-preservation?
Someone want to answer? Mr. Hinkle?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrill, first and foremost, we've made a significant change in the long-range goal for transportation across the state, where in the 2003-2004 state plan, our priority, our top priority was preservation. The significant change that we've made today in the draft plan is to take a balanced program approach and to treat preservation not as a sole priority that must be invested in first, but to look at all priorities, preservation, safety, mobility, and community needs as equals, and to allow the district engineers to make those tough decisions on how they will balance those programs against the broad goals that are established for this state. Now, as a result of their work on the district plans rolled up to the statistics that you're referencing, there is still a heavy investment being proposed in preservation across this state. The district engineers, as we look across this state, though, are making some adjustments to address safety and capacity mobility needs based on the public's input and based on their performance goals at a district level. So there are some changes. But again, I'll emphasize what you're emphasizing. There's still a heavy investment being made because there is a substantial amount of infrastructure that needs to be preserved, and so you'll see some of those statistics reflecting investments that need to be made there as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up, and I beg the committee's forbearance for a moment. I'm talking about Highway 14. I would hope that District 7, the engineer, will have the flexibility because expansion, to me, is a safety concern. I completely agree with preservation and the concerns about preservation, but I do hope that flexibility will be permitted so that safety can be addressed and there aren't artificial or permanent percentages that prevent that.
Thank you. Mr. Hinkle, I believe the new federal legislation will dictate some of that, too. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many years do we have left under the current federal program, funding program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, we are in the final fiscal year of the federal legislation. We expect that Congress will act to either continue the legislation that exists or to act to change that legislation with reauthorization beginning in 2010.
And Mr. Chairman, how much are we getting per year from that program? Roughly.
What's our current federal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, about $500 million annually.
Thank you.
No further questions? I'd just like to make an announcement. The next meeting is going to be a joint meeting with the Senate at Room 15 in the Capitol, and that's on 12:30 on Thursday. And also tomorrow morning, for anyone that wants to come, the Center for Transportation Studies is putting on a informative, whatever you want to call it, about seminar for roads, all the road systems that we have, truck highways and county roads, at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning in room
and 500 south. That's not mandatory, but for all of you that want to be there, I understand they'll have some lunch or breakfast or something. But that's a couple hours, and it's a pretty good program for you if you haven't gone through it.
Yeah.
If no further questions, the meeting is adjourned.